are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. I am your host, Tyus France. Normally we have Alex here, so I'm sure you're used to hearing Alex's voice. However, he is on a plane today, and we brought in a special guest. We're going to get to know him a lot better. So sitting next to me in studio today is Jason Weinman. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
So, Jason, everybody, all of our listeners don't know who you are yet. However, you have quite an impact here in Las Vegas and in Clark County in Nevada when it comes to the Libertarian Party. You've been a part of it for a long time. You've served multiple roles, consultant and director. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I first got involved with the Libertarian Party of Nevada in 2012. My first event was actually the 2012 National Convention, which was here at Red Rock, which is really the only reason I went. And I realized that the party nationally, on any level really, didn't have much institutional knowledge. Before that, I'd considered myself a libertarian, but I was a little bit concerned about you know, viability. I didn't really think there was much room for the party to grow. I thought maybe the deck was stacked against it. But from what I saw in 2012, I thought, you know, the party doesn't really know how the game works. They don't know what they should be doing to grow. So I got involved with the Libertarian Party of Nevada. By 2013, I was pretty heavily involved, and over the next couple of years, we focused on building, you know, a divisional structure like Alex, you know, like Alex runs and has been instrumental in developing. I started as the outreach director. We focused really on training, which is why we hosted a training event for libertarians nationwide here in Las Vegas called LPEX. And you know, we were able to really build the infrastructure that the Libertarian Party of Nevada has now. And I've served as the political director, and right now I'm consulting on campaigns, finding candidates. Now that we have our candidates, I think we have a great slate, and I'm getting them ready for the 2018 election cycle.
I think it's people like you that we really have to thank for the dramatic growth that took place in such a short period of time for the party. So I want to thank you personally for that. Thank you for all the hard work. It's been tremendous, and it shows. I mean, just by saying we're the fastest growing party in the state of Nevada, like in the country, all of that started by just a few people saying, you know what, we're not organized. But let's take it back to the very beginning. Did you start off as a libertarian? Because I don't know anybody who is raised and goes, oh, I'm just gonna be a libertarian. Well, they usually get there,
right? So growing up, you know, I wasn't terribly political. I was kind of a mathematically inclined kid, and I definitely had like some level of like interest and concern in world events. But after 9/11, I started to get more involved, more interested in politics. And you know, at first, I certainly wasn't a libertarian. You know, by the party standards, or what I would even consider a libertarian now. But I was skeptical of government. I certainly was a bit more of a neocon than I am now, or have been for a long time. I kind of had a very optimistic view of America as a country and of American power in the world, and I thought we could do a lot of good, not only for this country, but you know that there's a lot of problems in the world that I thought that the U.S. can take a powerful positive role in addressing. You know, and time passed, and I saw the way the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan went, and things didn't really seem to get better. And I became a little bit more skeptical, not necessarily of the government's agenda or ideology at that time, or really the place of America in the world, but certainly of the capability of the government to do the things that they were setting out to do. Then I went to college and I studied economics, you know, which kind of pushed me much further in a direction of not only foreign non-interventionism, but also non-interventionism in the market process and in the market system. And it kind of differentiates me from a certain wing of Libertarian Party activists who came from it from a more philosophical angle, more dedicated to the non-aggression principle, or other types of ethical philosophy rather than a practical, you know, problem-solving approach that really attracted me to libertarianism.
Were there any particular books or any particular thinkers that that influenced you?
Absolutely. Number one, first and foremost, the biggest influence I would say in my political development was Milton Friedman. I also read J.S. Mill in college, and he was a big influence on me. Later on, after I was already kind of identifying as a libertarian, I read Hayek, who was a big influence on me, and Mises, kind of the standards. But mostly, with a couple of exceptions, libertarians from the economic side of the spectrum. Because, you know, I grew up in New York, so for me, the thought of people opposing gay marriage or the thought of people opposing abortion was kind of silly. You know, I was raised in a place where that was very, very rare. Not that it didn't happen, but it was looked at as kind of a lower class, backwoodsy kind of a thing. And New York kind of has that interesting paradigm, I guess you might say. I don't know if paradigm's the word, but in New York, it's a very liberal place, but they're very intolerant of views from other places. So, you know, when I was exposed to those views, you know, I can't say in that case I was terribly disappointed, but I really have always kind of had a more liberal social outlook on things. And then, you know, obviously, you know, it's changed a little. There are some non-economists who have been influential. Jonathan Rauch, Kindly Inquisitors, was an influential book. He also did an article, I forget if it was for the Atlantic or something. I haven't seen it in a while, but it was about if healthcare worked like air travel worked like healthcare in the United States. And I thought it was a great article on the way the government makes healthcare worse.
Gotcha. So you said you're kind of a left side, or are you central?
Well, I don't consider myself to be a left libertarian, because to me, the political left is about some form of control over the economy, or viewing the role of the government as being proactive. And I certainly don't agree with any of those things. But a lot of people view me as being a left libertarian, and I certainly am socially liberal, because a lot of libertarians, especially in the post Ayn Rand, Murray Rothbard, Lou Rockwell, certainly Ron Paul libertarians, there's much more of a right-wing aspect, or faction at least, within the Libertarian Party and the broader liberty movement. And I certainly am not part of that, which is classifying me as a, you know, left libertarian makes a lot more sense after the rise of that movement than it would have, you know, 15 or 10 years ago.
So following along with that, there's a big challenge, because libertarians generally are kind of free thinkers. It's hard to get to this point without sometimes thinking outside of the box or being strongly influenced by people that have thought outside of the box. It's a lot easier if you're Democrat or Republican. You're just often conforming into what is popular, right? So with all these free thinkers out there, it's one big challenge we get is, how do we unify the thought process when there's so much divergence around small, small detail? And I've noticed you've, on several occasions actually, you've stood up for people and you've said, like, hey, this is somebody who's great. I really endorse them. There's some things that I don't agree with them on. And I've seen you actually like endorse somebody while still stating, I don't agree with all of their points. How do we move forward as a unified force when we have so many differing viewpoints, opinions, and minutia?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a big question, and I think it depends on the circumstance. I think an important thing for the Libertarian Party moving forward is an emphasis on values. Right now, there's a lot of emphasis on policy, so people often believe, you know, this guy's outside of libertarian orthodoxy on one issue, therefore he's not a libertarian. And a lot of times it's from people who are willing to accept heterodox or non-libertarian policies in other areas that are maybe less important to them, or where they agree, or where it's their guy. You know, so for example, I call them the cake people. Everybody who thinks Gary Johnson is not a libertarian because of his position that the Civil Rights Act should or at least can't, like, it's not unconstitutional or not wrong for the Civil Rights Act to require require bakers to serve all their patrons equally without regard for whatever.
You're talking about gay cakes.
Gay cakes. Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, gay cakes or you know, black cakes, whatever the case may be.
I haven't heard the black cake one yet, but I understand the concept.
Same idea, right. And you know, when I... It is an issue where I, on policy, disagree with Governor Johnson, but for very different reasons than most of the cake people. And I think that's important, because a lot of libertarians support freedom of association. But most of the ones who thought it's acceptable to have Governor Johnson as our candidate, even though we disagree on this issue, support it for a very different reason than the people coming maybe from the Mises Caucus, which is sadly named because Mises was not like this at all, but from the faction of the party that thinks the important thing here is the rights of bigots, right? And not that I'm saying bigots shouldn't have rights, but the reason I support freedom of association is because I believe markets provide an avenue to end or at least reduce discrimination, right? Because prices incentivize people to change their opinions, to change their behavior, to interact with each other. And Jim Crow and segregation were all enforced by government. And I think if you got that out of the way, you would reduce the power imbalances between various groups in the country. I think you would expose people. I think you would do a lot to reduce actual systemic bigotry, racism, and things like that. You know, Milton Friedman was speaking at a school somewhere, taking questions, and he got asked about the gender pay gap, and he explained that he obviously believes that men and women should be paid the same thing, but that if the government mandated it, it would result in worse outcomes for women, which we've actually kind of seen. And you know, his ultimate point, the sentence that kind of stuck with me when he was discussing this with the student was, "I'm on your side, but you're not." And I think that's maybe not a great political phrase because it might push people away, but it's a great like indication of the kinds of disagreements people have both within the party and externally when they're talking to other people. So I think in order to move forward, the Libertarian Party has to focus on values. Typically, you don't change people's minds on policy by talking about policy. You don't change people's... You're often, when you're talking about policy, it's kind of a smokescreen for something else. You know, a lot of people are dog whistling or outsource their policy beliefs on the candidate, the party, the person, whatever it may be, the philosophy that they think has all the answers. So a lot of times libertarians don't necessarily have very much policy information or policy detail, but they know that taxation is theft, and that's enough for them to take a hardline stance against any form of taxation, or in some cases any form of government spending. And to the average person, to a person who doesn't share their underlying value, which is the NAP, that argument doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? You could agree that taxation is theft. I mean, I would say it's difficult to disagree that taxation is theft, but that's not going to change your mind on whether we should have taxation unless you have this underwriting value that all taxation is bad. So I think we have to be, you know, I think we have to consider when we're trying to message for libertarianism within the party or outside of the party, we have to focus on what are the values of the audience we're addressing, and we should really reflect on what our own values are, because, you know, they're always, our own values are not, you know, they're not carved in stone the way a lot of people think the NAP is.
Do you think focusing on values sometimes becomes too lofty? For example, you were just talking about taxation being theft. Yeah, absolutely, very hard to argue against it. However, the idea of saying, you know, that's the platform, or that's what we're trying to unify around, people would go, well, you can feel that way and prove your point all you want. Taxes aren't going away. Too lofty. We're not going to pull it off. Why should we get behind that issue? So, I mean, is the idea of focusing on values maybe too high level as far as getting feet on the ground to actually change things and get people into office and so forth?
Well, so I think focusing on values is the beginning of a conversation. You know, I think when a lot of libertarians believe that it's easier to message to Republicans, for the past several years, although this is kind of changing now, I've found that it's easier to message to Democrats. And the reason is, if you can identify with somebody's values, you're talking from the same frame of reference, right? You're trying to accomplish the same goals. Then the question becomes how to get there, right? So when I'm talking to a Democrat, if I can establish that I'm trying to solve problems like healthcare scarcity, like education scarcity, I care about, you know, the future of America, I care about poverty, I care about all of these problems, then I can talk to that person about what should be done about it. And they tend to be very, very receptive. But when I'm talking to Republicans, Republicans typically have a value system that's a little bit less obvious to me, and it's a little bit more difficult to get past the what we're trying to accomplish phase, to get on the same page so that we can start talking about solutions and start talking about policy instead of values.
Gotcha. So you kind of use values to find the common ground and find like where people come together at the high level, then bring it down a little bit to say, okay, so now what are we going to do about it? You know, how do we get there together?
Exactly.
Gotcha. I like that. So speaking of the how do we get there together, what direction do you think the Libertarian Party should be moving in? What steps should we take? We've seen tremendous growth, but man, there's a long way to go. And we're, I guess, experiencing growing pains, right? Like we've got this uncharted path ahead of us, and we've got to decide what path we're going to take. What would you recommend?
So the Libertarian Party is by design a very decentralized organization, and that has ups and downs. And one advantage I think we do have, unlike the Democrats and Republicans or other parties, is that the Libertarian Party really puts the onus on state affiliates in most cases. So we really have a laboratory of experimentation in the way the U.S. states perhaps were supposed to be. And I think what we've seen in states over the past 40 years, we've seen a different kind of breakdown where we haven't seen much experimentation, because we haven't seen much growth because we didn't have the institutional knowledge to build an organization from the ground up. And we didn't, you know, I used to think the Libertarian Party can't be effective because we don't have the resources, right? But if you start to think about why we don't have the resources, it's not so much because, you know, we're a lost cause, so nobody wants to give us money and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We don't really have resources because we don't really have the kinds of professional development people who can build an infrastructure and a fundraising base the way, you know, the way Free the People, the new Matt Kibbe nonprofit has, or the way Students for Liberty did, or of course the way the Democrats and Republicans have over the past, you know, century and a half or so. So what we need, I think, is is to focus on building that institutional knowledge. I think, you know, a lot of people complain about the infighting. In the 6 years I've been with the party, it hasn't gotten worse. And I think we've made tremendous progress. And I think there's a number of people who think that that's the problem. And I think infighting can make us stronger because we need to have answers to a lot of the problems the party is facing. And one of those problems is messaging. A lot of libertarians believe messaging is not just libertarians. A lot of people believe messaging is really all of politics. If you have the right message, people will like you, and your party will grow, your organization will grow, and you'll be successful. That is demonstrably false. It's very much not the way politics works. But messaging is part of the picture. It's a necessary but not sufficient condition that we have good messaging. And right now we don't, and I think it's important for the party to start moving towards that value-oriented messaging I was talking about before, so that we can meet that necessary condition. But in order to grow and be effective on the level that we have to, in order to kind of get this country on a more libertarian trajectory, I think we need to start operating more professionally. I think more states should be looking at adopting Nevada's divisional structure. Just year to year, the amount of progress we're making is astronomical. And I think you know, we're only a couple of years away at this point, if we keep growing at the rate we're growing from being able to win state legislative seats. And it sounds kind of to a lot of libertarians as a long process, but in 40 years we haven't made much progress on that objective at all. And there's these myths within the Libertarian Party about how politics works that get passed down from one state chair to the next state chair, to one communications director to the next communications director in other state affiliates, that, you know, this is what you do, and it's find a candidate to run in as many races as possible. People need to see the word libertarian on the ballot. Fight for debate inclusion, which is very rarely effective. Focus on ballot access. And there's never really been an attempt to focus on how to run a campaign, how to build an organization, how you're supposed to fundraise. It's all about messaging. It's all about finding as many candidates as you can without any regard for who they are or even what their message is. And for 40 years, it's been a failing system. And what we need to do is adopt something like the divisional structure that we've adopted in Nevada, get people training either through, Wellstone or the Leadership Institute where it's possible, or even just through online political trainings that are available to anybody that really go into detail on how a campaign is supposed to be run, how you're supposed to break down a district, how you're supposed to get data, why that data is important, how to use that data, mobilizing volunteers, doing voter contact, voter ID, voter persuasion, all of these things. And I think that's what's going to revolutionize the party, and it's really what has been revolutionizing the party in the past couple of years in Nevada and to a certain extent nationally.
So you're not saying don't do the things we've been doing. You're saying do them a lot better than how we've ever been doing them before. Like, it's not just, hey, let's run people for office. It's let's run them on a campaign that's going to actually be effective. That's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay. I couldn't agree more. I think the more granular we can get on these details, the more successful we're going to be across the board. Now, as far as certain policies, there's some things that we seem to be targeting more often. I've been seeing a lot of us focusing on schools heavily. Do you think there's any particular issue that we should be focusing in on and making our issue? You know, we, as a party, we really championed civil liberties when it came to gay rights for a long, long, long time. And, you know, we're damn near there. The whole war on drugs had a tremendous effect on that, an impact on that. What policy do you think we should be focusing in on as a unified force to create the most impact?
Right now, and I actually first said this at the emergency libertarian convention we had in 2013, where the Libertarian Party of Nevada was kind of undergoing some organizational shakeups. There were some breaks and people were allowed to speak, and I stood up and I said, I think the Libertarian Party should be focused on immigration. And again, this is 2013, before Trump and the attention that position has gotten now, because we're really the only party that can say we support, wholesale immigration reform without some kind of anti-immigrant caveat, right? And I think there's a very large base of people who are very strongly motivated by this issue that don't really have anywhere to turn. And right now, for the most part, they're voting for the Democrats because their vote is really just a vote against the Republicans who are so hostile to them. And after the rise of Trump and the Trump movement, I think that's become much more true. I think we lost a lot of ground, or at least we didn't gain a lot of ground that we could have gained on the war on drugs and on gay marriage, because while we were the only party supporting those things, libertarians didn't want to push those issues to the forefront because they were so unpopular. And that's true. The war on drugs, fighting the war on drugs was a very popular issue in the 90s when I was growing up. And it was basically political suicide to get ahead of that image and say, look, I think we're doing more harm than good. And on gay rights, it's kind of the same. And by the time that changed, and we may have played a substantial role in that, but by the time that changed, just the years, the decades of not pushing that to the forefront really cost us a lot of the credit we could have gotten for leading on those issues. And I think if we had been right from, we were right from the beginning, but had we been focused on those issues, we would have gotten more credit, we would have gotten more recognition, and we wouldn't face a lot of the preconceptions, a lot of the the maybe negative reputation we have among Americans on the left that libertarians are just Republican, GOP light, you know, kind of a Ron Paul style paleo conservative right wing group.
Gotcha. So let's dive in a little bit. I'd love to hear your thoughts around immigration. Oh boy, I can't talk anymore, which is a real problem if you're doing a podcast. The specifics of it, we've seen our party kind of divide. There are certain people that have powerful voices out there that are now wedged on this issue. So on one hand, you have freedom of movement and autonomy and non-aggression, which would encourage open borders. On the other hand, you have people saying, well, by opening those borders, they are getting access to our massive welfare state, schools, roads, all that stuff. And there does seem to be a divide within our party. Where do you sit on this, and what do you? How do you feel we should move forward on this particular issue?
So I that divide certainly exists within the liberty movement, and has, you know, has certainly spread into the Libertarian Party. But I think for the most part, the faction within the Republican Party that calls themselves libertarians or liberty Republicans, that also is very active, certainly on social media, on big L libertarian groups, even though they tend to be party line loyal Republicans. Those people have been strongly influenced not only by Donald Trump, but also Ron Paul and Rand Paul and the Mises Institute, which again, very unfortunately named Mises Institute, and kind of the paleo populist so-called libertarian right wing, which I think is unfortunate, but I don't think it's a terribly big obstacle. For one thing, most of the delegates at any libertarian event at the national convention, for instance, most people who vote libertarian on the actual ballot, as opposed to who identify as libertarian on social media or even in political discussions, tend to be fairly progressive on immigration. There are exceptions, obviously. Within the party itself, the older members are much less likely to support a more open immigration program than the younger members. And in fact, in 2016, I was on the platform committee for the National Libertarian Party, and I proposed changing the 3.1 on our platform, the migration and is it migration and trade? I believe it's free migration is what the plank is called, and I proposed a revision to make it more open borders, and the vote was 100% in line with age. The older members on the board were opposed to a change. And again, it's a good plank. It's very open borders compared to the Democrats and Republicans, but it has caveats that allow for our candidates to fundamentally disagree with the entire... A caveat really at the end of the plank, which allows candidates to disagree with the entire text of the rest of the plank, really. And the older members were totally unwilling to change it, and the younger members were really surprised. And I don't know the ages of the members, but on the board, all of the votes in favor of changing, and they were just about half, were from the half of the group that was younger, and there was not a single person who was older who voted in favor of the change, or a single person who was younger who voted against the change. So the divide exists. I don't think it's a terribly difficult one to overcome, and I think it's one where our candidates can kind of lead the way. You know, I wouldn't NOTA a candidate at our convention because they disagree on this one issue.
Where would you place yourself on that divide?
I'm very strongly in favor of open borders, which people interpret kind of differently. I think the immigration system that this country had for most of its history is very close to an ideal one. Obviously, there were some exceptions like the Chinese Exclusion Act and the Alien and Sedition Act, but for most of American history, the only requirement for immigration to the United States was that you be able to make it here. And if you can get to Ellis Island, if you can get across the border, you can live here legally as a resident. And I think that would really change a lot of things for the better in this country, not only for immigrants, and not only for people who are trying to flee bad conditions in worse countries, but also for natural-born Americans who would benefit from the fact that people produce more than they consume, from the economic benefits of having a freer labor market, and also from the economic benefit, from the social benefits and the civic safety benefits even of having a smaller or non-existent black market for migrants.
So we're running up on our time, but is there anything as we come to a close here that you'd want to suggest the listeners go check out, read an article of this, get involved in some way? What do you have any final messages?
Well, first of all, if you're not yet and you are listening to this, I urge you to go to lpnevada.org/donate and contribute to the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Coming very soon, our new candidates who were recently selected at our convention last Saturday will have their own websites and their own donation links for you to follow. And I definitely urge you to check out and follow our candidates here in Nevada. And that's it. I mean, if you can volunteer, if you can get involved, if you can be a part of the libertarian movement, the Libertarian Party, then I urge you to do that.
All right. Thank you so much, Jason, for being on the show today. Can't tell you how much I appreciate you. Are you willing to come back at some point in the future?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, if you didn't get that website, that is lpnevada.org/donate. But at lpnevada.org, you can find out not only how you can donate your money, you can find out how you can give of your time, your energy. You can find out how we connect, and we would love to have you a part of it. If you are not registered to vote yet, go out and register to vote. We need more registered voters out there, too. And until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.